Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to today's program. Thank you for tuning in.
Looking forward to this discussion just a couple days before Thanksgiving.
Because it's an issue that maybe we've become more aware of at this season of the year, when we realize that there are many ministries and organizations that are helping or working on alleviating poverty. And they invite us to participate with them, and that's a good thing to do. But we want to talk a little bit about how we can alleviate poverty without hurting the poor and yourself. That's the subtitle of a book written a couple of years back by Stephen Corbett, Brian Fickert. And Brian is back with us on the line today, and we're going to talk about helping without hurting, and I know it's going to be a great discussion. I look forward to having you join in with us. In fact, we've got four copies of the book to give away, and so you can sign up for that by going to our Faith line at 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. And Ted, obviously our thoughts and prayers with families in Ferguson, Missouri, but these days, a lot of sort of unrest right under the surface and some boiling over.
So. Yeah, it's unfortunately the worst night of rioting, since last August when that happened as well. So definitely keeping people there in our prayers and just hope that healing begins.
And we may address that a bit in our conversation today as it relates. And we do want to mention, too, we're in the midst of our Angel Tree campaign, and we're going to hear a great story coming up here before the end of the show from Angel Tree. So stay tuned for that. Let's bring in Brian. Brian Fickert is Associate Professor of Economics at Covenant College. It's down in the Chattanooga area. He's founder and executive director of the Chalmers Center for Economic Development at Covenant College. He has a PhD in economics from Yale University, BA in mathematics from Dort College here in our Faith Radio listening area, specializing in third world development and international economics. He's been a consultant to the World Bank, the Inter-American Developmental Bank, and the United States Agency for International Development, published a number of articles. And this book that he co-wrote with Steve Corbett is it is probably the significant book on this topic. When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. Brian, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
It's great to be with you again, Neil.
And I know that we are also going to touch on a new resource that just came out here just shortly, Helping Without Hurting in Short-Term Missions. And I know you have some video of that, so we'll give you a chance to talk about that as we go on as well. But maybe just a word by way of background. When you started researching in this area and putting this book together, what did you find out? Did you find out that, we've been doing kind of hurtful things in the name of helping?
Yeah, we certainly want the listeners today to understand that we believe that followers of Jesus Christ must pour themselves out on behalf of those who are poor. Isaiah 58 teaches us that throughout the Bible, that one of the primary manifestations of being a follower of Jesus Christ is that we will have a particular concern for the physical, emotional, and spiritual needs of those who are poor. And so we don't want to do anything to dissuade the listeners today from that. We simply want to get them to think about whether they might do some things a little bit differently. In the last 15 years, there's been a real resurgence in the evangelical church's engagement with the poor, both at home and abroad, and we want to fan the flames of that. But we've also noticed that a lot of what the church is doing, a lot of what individual Christians are doing, actually can do a lot of harm. And so the book is written to try to address that kind of harm and to try to move the church in a direction of more empowering help that's more sustainable and long-term.
Are the stakes higher today? So, does help have sort of quote-unquote have more risks than it did before?
Well, I think there's a couple of factors. One is the church is kind of out of practice. You know, for centuries, you know, going back to the early church, we see the church trying to help the poor, but we kind of got out of practice. In the turn of the previous century, the evangelical church kind of pulled away from social action over concerns about liberal theology and social engagement, and so we kind of got out of practice. And now, as the evangelical church is rediscovering its mission, rediscovering its mandate to care for the poor, we're jumping back in, but there's a lot that's been learned by the world at large about how to help the poor, and the evangelical church has kind of missed some of that conversation. So we're trying to bring the evangelical church into that larger conversation to say there's some things that we've all learned, there's some things about helping the poor that we should be tapping into. The second issue I would say is simply that the massive amounts of wealth that many of us in North America have accumulated creates greater disparities than the world has ever seen before. And so the gap is bigger than ever before, and our propensity for wanting to use those material resources to fix the problem is perhaps greater than ever before. And we think material resources are certainly part of the solution, but at the core of poverty is something far deeper than simply a lack of things. And so we're probably more predisposed to try to address those problems through material things because we have so many of them, and yet that's not really all that it's going to take. It's going to take something deeper.
We'll get into that in a moment. I'm interested, though. I know you've written this book to address to the church, and actually John Perkins and David Platt have written forewords, and I recommend the book to you. It's a great resource. We've got some copies to give away as well. But has government and maybe NGOs are they hurting when they're helping as well? I mean, is everybody sort of using the same strategies?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that. While our book is very much addressed at the local church, what the local church can do, I think the mistakes that local church is making are often reflected at an international level, at government levels, at national and local. It's reflected in relief and development organizations. Many of us, particularly those of us here in the West, have a conception of life and a conception of human beings that's often very materialistic. We tend to think of things in material terms, and we tend to think of poverty in material terms. And so if you ask most North Americans, what is poverty, they will say something like poverty is a lack of food, a lack of clothing, a lack of shelter. We tend to define poverty as a lack of some material things, and that shapes the federal government's welfare programs. It shapes how many NGOs work with the poor, and it shapes how our churches and even ourselves as individuals, when we stop at a street corner, and we see a homeless person there, we roll down the window, we put a quarter in the hands of that homeless person. That's a material understanding of the problem. It's a material solution to the problem. But we know deep down that when we put that quarter in that person's hand, that he or she is going to be back there again the next day. It's not going to really solve the problem. And so yeah, there are parallels from the welfare system all the way down to what we do as churches and even individuals. It all comes out of this material understanding of poverty. When you ask the poor what poverty is, they answer it differently than we do. They don't typically just say it's about a lack of stuff. They typically say things like, I feel shame. I feel less than human. I feel like I have no voice. I feel like I can't affect change in my life. They tend to define their poverty in far more psychological and social terms than we do. And that disconnect between how we think of it and how they're experiencing it is at the heart of the crisis in poverty alleviation work around the world and across the U.S.
Is this something that, as you've worked through this, you've taught about this, is this something that you've experienced maybe in your own, just in researching how churches or missions or ministries are actually trying to alleviate poverty?
Very much so. It's certainly reflective of a lot of social science research we've done, but it's also reflective of just very personal experience in working with churches and mission agencies and Christian relief and development agencies all over the world and across North America. We see this propensity towards a material understanding of poverty and a material set of solutions. And what we're arguing for is a more relational understanding of what a human being is and a more relational understanding of what poverty alleviation really looks like. And so it's certainly the case that material assistance can be useful. But at the end of the day, human beings are wired for relationship with God, with ourselves, with others, and with the rest of creation, that to be an image bearer, to bear the image of God Almighty is to live rightly in these four relationships with God, self, others, and the rest of creation. And so what poverty alleviation is really about is not so much just providing material resources. It's about helping restore people to living in right relationship. And that's a different kind of approach. Material resources can be part of it, but the end goal isn't just stuff. The end goal is to live in proper relationship in all four of these areas. And so that reshapes and reframes the very approaches that we use to work with the poor.
Well, of course, when we talk about relationship, I mean, we know that relationships take time and attention. Giving money towards something is pretty quick and efficient.
Totally. Money is the quick one, right?
Yeah.
And this shows up a lot at Thanksgiving time, right? And so many of us are going to go door to door handing out turkeys to people and canned goods, and there's a place for that. But certainly there's a need for something deeper. Restoring people to right relationship is a long, long, long-term process. It's going to take a lot more than a few canned goods at Thanksgiving or some toys at Christmas time. It's going to take a long-term investment. I mean, this is what we're seeing in Ferguson. I mean, when you look at the situation there, and I'm certainly not an expert at all in what's happening there, but when you look at the people in that community, in the communities there, they're not materially poor by the world standards. The reality of it is most Americans are extremely wealthy compared to the rest of the world. But there's a deep relational breakdown between white folks and black folks in Ferguson and indeed across the country. Those broken relationships are at the root of the crisis. They're at the root of the problem. As is so obvious, those relationships are not repaired overnight, and it's going to take something more, I should say, than turkeys and toys to repair those kinds of relationships.
We're going to talk more about that. How do we move past turkeys and toys and dollars given at this time of year to really see poverty alleviated without hurting the poor? That's the subtitle of the book, When Helping Hurts. And the subtitle is How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. My guest is Brian Fickert. Brian's Associate Professor of Economics at Covenant College, Founder and Executive Director of the Chalmers Center for Economic Development at Covenant College, and author of this important book. We've got four copies to give away. But I'd love to have you join the conversation as well. Maybe you've been involved in some compassion ministries and you have some thoughts on the subject, or maybe have been a recipient of some help, quote-unquote. I'd like to join in the conversation. You call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. We'll talk more with Brian Fickert in just a moment. Well, that's what's going to take. It's going to take some help along the way. We want to make sure that the helping that we're offering isn't hurting those that most need it, and ourselves, in fact. And Brian Fickert is here to help us kind of work through that. Associate Professor of Economics at Covenant College, also is the Founder and Executive Director of the Chalmers Center for Economic Development at Covenant College, and has written this important book, co-written it, called When Helping Hurts. And there's also a new resource out called Helping Without Hurting in Short-Term Missions. We'll talk about that in a moment as well. There's an online video-based study there as well. So, Brian, we've sort of touched on the basic premise that it's not about material, but it's about relationship. And maybe just to review, it's what, relationship with God, self, others, and creation, right?
Yeah. We believe that what the Bible teaches is that human beings are made in the image of God, but God is three in one. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost exist from all eternity in relationship with one another. So God is inherently a relational being. And as beings made in his image, we are wired for relationship as well. And to experience the good life, to experience human flourishing, to experience what God has for us as image bearers, is to experience those four relationships in the way that God designed them to be experienced. That when we experience those four relationships the way that God intended, we experience the good life. We're square pegs in square holes. We experience what God has designed us to be. But the fall has happened. And as a result of the fall, those four relationships are broken for all of us. You know, it's interesting. So often those who are more on the political, conservative end of the political spectrum tend to think that people are poor because they're lazy, or they're poor because they're not thrifty. They tend to focus on the individual brokenness. And those who are on the more progressive or liberal end of the political spectrum tend to focus on broken systems and systemic injustice as a cause of poverty. But what Genesis 3 would suggest to us is that both are true, that these relationships are broken both because of individual sin, but also because of systemic injustice. So for example, take the relationship to creation. That's fundamentally about work. It's about being able to work and support yourself through your own work. And, well, why is that relationship broken? Well, for some people, it's because they don't have good work habits, because they don't want to work hard. There's an individual laziness component that can be there. But you can also have broken systems that contribute to brokenness in that relationship. So when things go haywire on Wall Street and we end up in a recession, there simply aren't enough jobs to go around. And so because the systems are broken, people can't experience that relationship of work with the rest of creation. So we think that the approach to poverty alleviation has to be about addressing broken individuals and addressing broken systems in a way that promotes people living in right relationship in these four key areas.
And if we address enough of us address what individual brokenness, is that going to help alleviate the broken systems, or are we going to be sort of fighting against that at every turn?
We've got to address both broken individuals and broken systems. I mean, we can say to people, go out and get a job, but if there's no jobs available, or if there's discrimination against people on the basis of their race or their gender, it doesn't matter how hard they're trying to get a job, there's no job for them. And so we've got to address broken individuals and broken systems. They're both broken. And the good news of the gospel is that Jesus Christ is reconciling all things. He's big enough to fix individuals. He's big enough to address the broken systems, both of which need to be fixed to alleviate poverty.
You know, you talk a little bit about the sort of health and wealth gospel. I think most of us think, well, we're not part of that. But, you know, there is some points in our faith journey that we need to review, isn't it?
Yeah. I really believe that most evangelical Christians in North America actually believe in the health and wealth gospel without realizing it. You know, many of us would reject the health and wealth gospel, you know, because at its core, the health and wealth gospel seems to be saying that the more sanctified that one is, that the more godly that one is, the more God guarantees that they will prosper in the material sense in this life. And that simply isn't true. If you think about the Apostle Paul, for example, it's hard to find a more godly person in the Bible other than Jesus, than the Apostle Paul. And yet, you know, he wasn't enjoying a lot of economic prosperity. He was beaten. He was shipwrecked. He was tortured and ultimately executed. And so there's not a guarantee that higher degrees of spirituality will lead to greater material prosperity. And yet so often we assume that people who are poor, either in North America or overseas, that what they really need is for us to lead them to Jesus. And that may be the case, but the fact that we assume that suggests that we actually believe in the prosperity gospel. We assume that their lack of resources, their lack of material prosperity, means that they don't know Christ. And in reality, I have found the most spiritual people in the entire world are people living in slums on less than $1.25 a day. These are people who trust in the sovereignty of God for every breath they take, who trust in Him for food, who, when they pray the Lord's Prayer, give us this day our daily bread, mean it in a way that I have never, ever, ever meant it. And so we've got to be very careful not to assume that people who have fewer financial resources are necessarily less spiritual than we are. And the fact that we tend to assume that suggests that we actually have bought into the lies of the prosperity gospel.
It does challenge us when we pursue mission opportunities, and I know that's kind of the newest work you put together, Helping Without Hurting in Short-Term Missions, and there's a video-based study there. But let's just kind of introduce some of the concerns there as we think about going on some short-term trip.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you talk about in When Helping Hurts is that once we define poverty as being relational as opposed to simply being about a lack of material things, that changes the way that we would work amongst the poor. Suddenly, it's not about handouts, although providing material resources can be part of it, but suddenly it's not just about handouts. Suddenly, it's about empowering relationships. suddenly it's not just about defining what's wrong with people and trying to fix what's wrong. Suddenly it's about looking at their assets and saying what gifts and abilities and resources has God given them. Suddenly it's not just about doing things to them, but rather walking with them. And the problem with most short-term trips to materially poor regions is that they actually come out of a material understanding of poverty. They tend to think that the solution is to provide material resources. And so we run in to a poor community either in North America or around the world, and we hurl around resources thinking that's going to solve the problem. We fail to come alongside of the poor in an empowering way. We fail to look at their assets and simply try to address their needs. We fail to engage with them and simply do things to them or for them. And so probably short-term trips are probably the worst arena that we see the North American church engaging in as it works with the poor. Once you define poverty as being root and broken relationships, you've got to realize that you cannot solve poverty in a week-long trip. It's simply not possible. It takes long periods of times to alleviate and to address those broken relationships. But you can make poverty worse in the space of a week by going in and undermining local resources, local initiative, by undermining those organizations that are working there over the long haul. It's possible to hurt the poor in the very process of trying to help them. There are plenty of letters from mothers in slums around the world that have been written to editorial pages in the New York Times saying, please don't give your kid a great experience at the expense of mine. Please don't treat me and my family members like we're animals in a zoo. We're human beings. Please treat us that way. And so our book on short-term missions is really trying to apply the core ideas of When Helping Hurts into the space of short-term mission trips. We do believe those trips redefined trips can play a significant role in the kingdom. We're not trying to say that trips have no role, but we are saying they need to be redesigned, reconfigured. Our expectations about them need to be recalibrated in order to actually do good, both for those who go and those on the receiving ends.
Just have a couple minutes before our break. I'm just curious, you know, if we can't do it right, quote unquote, should we do it at all?
That's a great question. Again, our message is not that we should stop trying to help the poor. Our message is that we should quadruple our efforts, but do it differently. In the context of short-term trips, it is our view that we probably need to do fewer of them and use those funds for more empowering long-term developmental kinds of strategies. But we do believe there is a role for those trips if they're reconfigured and reshaped and relaunched in a different way.
Talking today with Brian Fickert, and we're talking about When Helping Hurts, how to alleviate poverty without hurting the poor and yourself. That's the title of his groundbreaking book. He and Steve Corbett co-wrote it. Brian is, among other things, associate professor of economics at Covenant College, founder and executive director of the Chalmers Center for Economic Development. That's also at Covenant College. He has a Ph.D. in economics from Yale University and a B.A. in mathematics from Dort College, and has spent a lot of time studying issues of what's going on not only in the third world but here at home in terms of how we care for those that are in need. Brian, just is there a website to find out about the online video-based study here for the Helping Without Hurting?
Yeah, if they just go to the Chalmers Center's website, they'll see all kinds of information there, www.chalmers.org. There's all kinds of information there.
All right, chalmers.org. Get a place to start. And we'll continue our conversation in a moment with Brian Fickert. By the way, do have some copies of his book, When Helping Hurts, to give away. It would be a great resource for you, especially if you're involved in maybe your church has some outreach things, maybe planning some short-term mission trips for next summer. Give us a call. Sign up for that. It's 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. Or you can also connect with us online by going to our show page. It's myfaithradio.com. And click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link right there. You can leave us a question, and we'll talk more in just a moment.
Everybody needs a helping hand. Take a look at your fellow man and tell me what can I do today. 'Cause everybody needs a helping out. If that ain't what it's all about, tell me what can I do.
That's the question I think all of us as followers of Christ want to be asking, and maybe we are. Hopefully, we are asking that question, but we want to do what's right, and that would be God honoring. We're talking about it today, reflecting on a great book came out actually a few years ago and been updated, I think just a couple years ago, and there's a new edition study guide, and we'll tell you about that in a moment. Talking about When Helping Hurts: How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. And it's co-written by our guest today, Brian Fickert. Brian is at Covenant College, where he's Associate Professor of Economics and the Chair of the Chalmers Center for Economic Development. You can find out more on their website, chalmers.org. And also the resource, Helping Without Hurting in Short-Term Missions. We do have some copies of When Helping Hurts to give away. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number if you'd like to join the conversation. So, Brian, maybe we should touch on, we sort of talked around a little bit, but some strategies, how to get started. We talked some foundational things, but you know, if we actually want to have some practical things to do without hurting, what should that look like?
Yeah, thanks so much for asking that. You know, the most important thing really has to do with a change in our own minds and hearts. You know, we can talk about some particular interventions, and I will in a second, but at the core of this is the following idea. Again, we're made in the image of God. We are wired for relationship. The fall has broken that. For many poor people around the world, the brokenness manifests itself in what some would call a marred self-image. Oftentimes, poor people have a sense of inferiority, a sense of shame, a sense of incapacity. That broken relationship with self looks for them like a marred self-image. But you know, you and I are broken too. But for most of us who have material resources in North America, the way that we are broken in our relationship with ourselves is that we're a little bit too proud, a little bit too haughty. We think that we have been uniquely gifted by God to perform better and to create wealth in a way that the poor can't. And so we have a little bit of a problem of pride. And when those of us who have a sense of pride interact with those who have a sense of shame and inferiority, it's a bad mix. Because the way that we speak towards them, the way that we interact with them, tends to confirm in them that they are inferior. And as that happens, they tend to become more passive. They tend to sit back. They tend to wait for us to fix them. And as they do that, we tend to get more disgusted. We tend to say, man, they're not showing much initiative. Man, they're not really showing much entrepreneurship. Man, they're waiting for me to do everything for them. And so their shame is enhanced, and our pride is enhanced, and both parties are worse off at the end of the day. So I'm going to talk about some particular interventions, but what I really want our readers to hear, or our listeners to hear, is that at the core of this, the primary strategy is actually our repentance. Repentance of our sense of pride, repentance of our sense of superiority, and an embracing of the good news of the gospel, which is that we stink, but that Jesus doesn't stink. And he comes and he starts to give us a new aroma. But if we ever start to think that new aroma is something that we conjured up ourselves, we'll always be tending towards pride. And so repentance and embracing of the gospel is the primary strategy here. And then out of that, there's all kinds of interventions we can talk about. There's kind of a foundational approach. It's called asset-based development, which says as you're engaging with poor individuals and poor communities, start off not with what's wrong with them, start off with what's right. Ask them to identify their own gifts, their own abilities. Ask them to articulate their own goals and dreams. Then ask them how they can use their own gifts and abilities and resources to achieve their goals and dreams. And then how can we come alongside of them in that process? And so it shifts it away from a focus on what are we going to do to them or for them towards what do they have? What can they accomplish? And how can we come alongside of them as they rediscover their role as stewards and image bearers? And then there's all kinds of particular interventions that one can use that build off of that basic framework. The Chalmers Center is very involved in something called Faith and Finances, which is just financial education for very, very poor people. When a woman walks into your church asking for help with her electric bill, Faith and Finances is a way of addressing that person's particular situation by asking that person to understand, again, their gifts, and the resources, how to steward those. It's an opportunity to walk alongside of that person, to help them to budget better, to help them to plan better, but also to enter into a deep relationship with them that can be mutually transformative for everybody involved. So financial education is one, and there's information about that on our website. Job preparedness training, helping people get off of welfare and into the workforce, walking with people across time as they discover that work is part of the created order, that work is good, helping them to enter the workforce. We have a partner organization called Jobs for Life, which is a national organization which can help you if you want to pursue that kind of strategy. Additional things internationally, we're very involved in there of microfinance, helping the poor to save and lend their own resources to one another so that they can start small businesses and pay school fees to develop human capital for the next generation. So there's all kinds of empowering strategies that one can use, but at the heart of it is the recognition that we're dealing with image bearers who are fallen, and that we are image bearers who are fallen, and that both of us need to apply the gospel in our lives in deeper ways.
Well, Brian, let's take a call from Mark, who's listening in Oakdale, because our conversation yesterday was on homelessness, as someone who had actually experienced that for several months. But Mark has a question that's pretty practical for all of us, I think, as we drive around. Mark, go ahead. You're on with Brian Fickert.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. A lot of times I pull up the corner and I see someone standing there and I just feel kind of embarrassed what I should do. And my daughter said, well, she kind of keeps a little bundle in her car. She's got some socks and some things like that in there that a homeless person would need, and maybe a gift certificate to a restaurant or something. How can we help a person? And I also work for a place that works for drug and alcohol addicts. And so I'm thinking, well, what is the best thing to do in a situation like that?
That's a great question. Quite frankly, that's one of the hardest questions to answer. The truth of the matter is it's easier to work in Rwanda than it is to work with that particular person on the street corner that you're referring to. It's so frustrating because they're sitting here right at our fingertips, and yet it's much harder. A couple things. The first is I think we have to be aware that mental illness is often a big part of the story for homeless people. And so everything I've said so far on this program is assuming that we are dealing with people who are rational and who are coherent and who can make decisions to govern themselves and their lives. And for some homeless people, it simply isn't true. We have a broken mental health system that's turning people out into the streets, many of whom actually can't take care of themselves properly. And so the first thing we've got to discern is this person mentally capable of making rational decisions? And that determines a bit our approach. If the person is completely mentally incapacitated, then it's going to take a different kind of thing, and they're probably going to need long-term relief assistance somehow. But assuming that the person is rational, what we've got to do is not enable them to stay on the street corner, but work with them to get them into a more empowering kind of approach. And it's in the short run, it might be that we're going to need to provide them with socks, or that we're going to need to provide them with some food. But we've got to be careful because we're not the only person who's doing that for them. Day after day, car after car could be doing that for them. And so taken as a whole, what we're all doing is essentially undermining the long-term development of this person. And so I very much advocate knowing where there are long-term programs available to refer people who are homeless to. I almost never give out food or clothing to a person who's on a street corner, but rather would try to refer them to an organization or a ministry that I know will work with them for a more long-term and empowering relational process. You can't solve relational brokenness through handouts and material resources. It just doesn't work. It takes people and Christ and the power of the Holy Spirit to restore people. You can't do it through handouts of food and clothing alone.
Brian, I'm curious to know, since the book came out originally, I think in 2009, are there signs that maybe the church and compassion organizations are sort of getting it right more often than not?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of encouraging signs. We're seeing some churches closing down programs that they discovered were doing more harm than good. And we see them redistributing those resources, human, financial, and spiritual, towards more empowering approaches. I know of one very large church that has completely shut down all of its short-term missions programs and simply said, this is not a good stewardship of our money. Let's release this money for more empowering approaches. And so huge, dramatic changes in some churches. We see some churches that I know of one church that was giving out $1 million annually to people who need help with their electric bills without having any relationship, without even knowing who the people were that they were writing these checks to. I've seen that church say, you know what, let's sharpen our focus. Instead of giving away $1 million to people who we don't have any relationship with, let's focus our resources more narrowly on those who actually are open to long-term change in their lives and to those who we can actually walk with in a deeper way. And so they're focusing in, I'm seeing greater and greater focus, greater and greater thinking about effective strategies. We're seeing a lot of shifts.
Does that mean for those of us that want to maybe get started, want to do something right, does that mean maybe getting plugged into a rescue mission, or is it just sort of looking around our community and what the needs are, or supporting international relief development organizations?
Yeah, there's all kinds of things you can do. The first thing you might want to do is just look at your own church. What is your church doing in its benevolence policies? When people are walking in off the street asking for help with their electric bills or asking for gas money or asking for food, there are some very simple things that your church can do at that very moment to kind of shift the tone and the direction of the conversation away from simply handing out money to put Band-Aids over problems, and to shift it towards how can we walk with you across time? How can we walk with you in ways that are empowering? Are you willing to allow us to be part of your life? There are some very simple things that you can do that are discussed in our book that can shift that very first conversation that's taking place in your churches week in and week out. Most of us are not even aware of what our church's benevolence policies and intake policies are. It's a very simple thing one can do. A second thing you mentioned is outstanding as well. Get involved in a local ministry, but look for empowering ministries. Look for ministries that are asking people to contribute something to their own improvement. I know of a gentleman, he's actually a dear friend of mine, who's extremely wealthy. And a few blocks from his house is a homeless shelter. And my friend's son lives in that homeless shelter. His son is completely capable of functioning. Why does he live in the homeless shelter? Because he can. They provide him with food, they provide him with a bed. He gets up every day and he goes to the library and he plays video games and he goes back to the shelter again. That homeless shelter is undermining that young man's development. That homeless shelter is undermining my friend's capacity to hold his son accountable, because every time my friend tries to hold his son accountable for long-term change, the free handouts from the homeless shelter undermines the process. And so it's not just a matter of getting involved in local ministry. It's getting involved in local ministry. It's actually pursuing an empowering process, seeking to restore people as image bearers rather than enabling them to persist in situations that are below what God would call image bearers to be. Internationally, the same thing. Look for organizations and ministries that are walking with the poor in ways that help the poor to discover their own gifts, their own abilities, and their own assets, to enable them to discover that they're made in the image of God, they have inherent dignity and worth and capacity, and to steward those gifts, as opposed to ministries and organizations that simply undermine local initiative and local capacity through hurling material resources around. So it takes research, it takes due diligence.
Brian Fickert is my guest. He serves as the founder and executive director of the Chalmers Center for Economic Development at Covenant College, where he is an associate professor of economics, and has co-authored this landmark book called When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. And there's also a new resource called Helping Without Hurting in Short-Term Missions, the leader's guide there, and there's an online video-based study for doing short-term missions without doing long-term harm, which I think would be something that the many of us would want to review, and certainly our churches as well have a copy of that. We'll talk more with Brian in just a moment. I want to talk a little bit about maybe one of the seldom talked about underlying issues in this poverty equation. We'll get to that and more, and take your questions as well. There's some copies of the book, When Helping Hurts, to give away. If you'd like to sign up for that, we'll do a drawing at the end of the show. It's 877-933-2484. It's 7 past the hour. Talking today with Brian Fickert, co-author of a landmark book called When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. Brian serves as an associate professor of economics at Covenant College and directs their Chalmers Center for Economic Development there at Covenant. He's a Midwestern guy, and despite being a Packers fan, we still like him. So, actually, we're glad to have connected again. And Brian, one of the things that, and I know you're familiar with organizations like International Justice Mission, and Gary Haugen has written, and Victor Boutros together written about the underlying but often not discussed problem of violence, how that plays such an important role in the alleviation of poverty. Have you discovered that in your research as well?
You know, it's an excellent question. As I said earlier, we believe that poverty is rooted in broken relationships, but that those relationships are broken both because of individual brokenness, but also systemic injustice. And what I see IJM trying to do is to address that systemic injustice. And it's profoundly important. And what's so disconcerting about it is that most evangelical Christians in North America are actually fairly blind to systemic injustice, which explains a bit of our trouble in understanding some of the stuff that's going on in Ferguson. You know, there's actually a book that came out a number of years ago called Divided by Faith by Christian Smith and Michael Emerson, and they did research on the views of Americans about poverty. And they asked Americans questions about, do you think people are poor because of their individual behaviors, or do you think people are poor because of systemic injustice? And there is one subgroup in America that was the least likely to believe that systemic injustice was a cause of poverty. And that subgroup were Caucasian evangelical Christians. Caucasian evangelical Christians are the least likely subpopulation in America to believe that systemic injustice, including violence against the poor, is a cause of poverty. But it is. The scriptures are full of indications that oppression happens against the poor, and we see it both in the United States and we see it around the world. And so we've got to open our eyes to the fact that the fall has happened, and the fall affects absolutely everything. It affects individuals and it affects systems. And Colossians 1 teaches us that Jesus Christ is bringing reconciliation to all things. He's addressing broken individuals, and he's addressing broken systems to bring healing as far as the curse is found. And so that doesn't tell us in any particular situation how much of the problem is individuals, how much of the problem is systems, but our eyes, our worldview ought to be open to the possibility that both are in play. And that's what I see IJM doing very well.
Brian, Rita sent in an email question. It says, my teenage daughter wants to go on a mission trip this summer to Peru. What kind of activities would be beneficial to the people there that would help rather than hinder?
That's a great question. So the first thing is to submit to local authority. When I mean that, there must be a host organization there. And what we really need to start to do is to submit to the leadership of those local host organizations or those local churches. So often we decide what people in Peru need, and we go and do it to them. We put a lot of pressure on those host organizations or host churches. The number of stories that missionaries and indigenous churches and organizations have told me about how they feel pressure from Americans to do things that they know are silly in their context is off the charts. So the first thing is to submit to local leadership. Number two, I would say don't imagine that you're going to go and solve poverty. That's not going to happen. Go in a posture of being a learner. Go and learn. Go and encourage those who are there over the long haul. Go and fellowship with them. That sounds a lot less exciting than going and solving poverty. But again, you can't solve poverty in a week anyways. What you can do is encourage those who are there over the long haul. I think we drastically underestimate the power of encouragement, the power of fellowship. People who are involved in this kind of work over the long haul are typically exhausted. They're facing spiritual battles every day. And to have people from around the world come alongside of them and say, we love you, we believe in you, we support you, we will support you when we go back home, is incredibly powerful ministry. It's not frontline ministry, it's backstage ministry. It says the local people, the local ministry is going to be front stage. We're going to be backstage. We're going to support them. They're the primary manifestation of Jesus Christ in this community. We're not, but we're here to cheer them on, to root for them, to support them. It's a profoundly important role, but it's a different role than most of us as Americans are used to playing.
Good advice, and we're going to wrap it up there. I know You need to run, and we have some Angel Tree things to talk about. Brian, just remind us again the website to get more information.
Yeah, it's just Chalmers.org. It's www.chalmers, Chalmers.org.
Check it out today. Some great resources there. You can find out about helping without hurting and short-term missions, or the classic book, When Helping Hurts. Brian Fickert, Associate Professor of Economics and founder and director of the Chalmers Center for Economic Development at Covenant College, to join us today. Brian, blessings to you. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thanks so much. Great to be with you again.
Thank you. You're listening
Bye-bye.
To Connecting Faith. Glad to have you listening to the broadcast today, and we appreciate the great insight from Brian Fickert. Glad to have you listen to the podcast, too. If you missed it, it's myfaithradio.com, and you can pass it on to a friend as well. I want to just, before our time is gone today, I want to take a moment again to talk about the wonderful work of Angel Tree. You know, they allow an incarcerated parent to say to a child, I messed up, I can't be with you right now, but it's not your fault, and I love you, and think about you all the time. And that's what happens when Angel Tree provides a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love from their incarcerated parents. $84 would reach six children and throughout the course of this month and into December before through Christmas. We're going to be just sharing stories of lives that have been impacted and changed, and invite you to do the same. You can sign up, give a gift by going to our website at myfaithradio.com, or you can call 855-59-ANGEL. But listen to this story from Jane. And think about how you might be able to be involved today.
Jane Chips of Daniels, West Virginia, shares her own Angel Tree story.
Well, it was Sunday morning, and my husband went on into the sanctuary, and I was waiting around in the vestibule speaking with a few friends. And I walked over to the Angel Tree, and I picked one off, and I was looking at it, and I noticed that in the time I was standing there, that several people had taken this one particular angel off of the tree, had read it, and put it back on the tree. So I turned it over to see, you know, what was about it that nobody wanted to take it. And it was a request from a father for a bicycle for his 12-year-old daughter. And I just turned it back around and went on into the sanctuary and sat down next to my husband, and I was so full of emotion that I couldn't hardly talk. So when church was over, we were still sitting in the pew, and I looked at him and I said, Tom, I said, you know, we've got a bicycle at our house, and I think that God is trying to tell us that we need to give this particular bicycle to this little girl. And the bicycle had been our daughter, Gary Elizabeth's bicycle. She was 12 years old when we gave it to her for her birthday. And a few months after that, she was killed in a tragic school bus accident. And Tom was so full of emotion, and the tears were rolling down his cheeks, and he said, no doubt about it, let's do it. So I took that angel off the tree, and we went home and cleaned the dust off the bicycle and took it to the church with the put the little girl's name on it. Well, a few Sundays later, the church had a Christmas party for the Angel Tree recipients. And when the little girl got the bicycle, she was so overwhelmed that all she could do was stand there and cry. And, of course, she didn't know where the bicycle had come from. We requested that she not be told that it was from us or that we were there, but we just wanted to be there and see the joy that it was going to bring her, because our little girl is very special, and we felt that this little girl must be very special too.
God had a plan for Carrie and for her bicycle, but it took an Angel Tree gift that no one else wanted to provide to make that plan come together. You too can step forward like Tom and Jane Chips, and just be faithful to God's call.
Now, I love the opportunity we have through Angel Tree to really make a difference in a child's life. You know, many people have been giving already. We're, as a goal for Faith Radio listeners, hoping to reach 1,000 children with a Christmas gift and the gospel and a message of love from their incarcerated parent, and already just getting underway here, just a couple of days. 38 children have been taken care of already, so your gift of $50 or $100 or more really going to make a difference. $84 will help reach six children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love. Will you join in? You can call 855-59-ANGEL, or if it's more convenient, just go right to our website, myfaithradio.com. It's on the front page there, myfaithradio.com, and you can sign up today. Angel Tree helps a child reconnect with their incarcerated parent, and it's vitally important to bringing long-term hope to and healing to a child. You know, without a parent's positive influence, the 2.7 million children of prisoners often follow their parents into prison. We have a very strategic role that we can play simply by plugging into Angel Tree this year. So would you consider that? Go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and thank you for your gift of $84 to reach six children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, or a message of love from their incarcerated parent, or do whatever you can. And thank you for doing that. Or you can call 855-59-ANGEL. It's 855-59-ANGEL. Thank you for listening to Connecting Faith on the Faith Radio Network.